Hindu name of the yoga philosophy?
J-N-A-N-A, and it's pronounced Jnana, as though J-N were G-Y, Jnana. They put an enya, you know, that Spanish enya, over the first N there, Jnana. The religious one is bhakti, B-H-A-K-T-I. The action one is karma, K-A-R-M-A. Karma means action. And the first is kundalini, also called raja yoga. That's, say, the royal or highest or kingly, the king of yogas. Raja, R-A-J-A, first day long. Hatha. Hatha, H-A-T-H-A with a dot under the T, is a sort of physical yoga for achieving physical strength, standing on your head and all that, not to achieve illumination, but to build up a strong body. Sometimes Hatha yoga is regarded as prerequisite to Raja yoga, because Raja yoga really demands a great deal of the body and is well to build it up first. Most of the yoga that's taught people, you know, you buy books on how to practice yoga at home. This is something like Walter Camp's 10-minute setup. It's a setting up exercise. That is the Hatha yoga.
Is there nothing in the Hindu tradition of assimilation, of final assimilation into the Buddha?
You see, since you are already a Buddha, only don't know it, you don't get assimilated into the Buddha. You realize that neither you nor he, as separate beings, is a final term. Buddhahood is your condition, only you just haven't reached it. There's a wonderful little story that belongs to the story of the birth of the Buddha. The Buddha was born from his mother's side, and in a miraculous manner. And deities came down from heaven to receive the little child on a golden cloth. And they put him on the ground. And the first thing he did, immediately he was born, was take 7 steps. And he points up and he points below. And in a voice of thunder, he says, "Worlds above, worlds beneath, there's no one in the world like me." I heard Dr. Suzuki give a little lecture on just that theme. I don't know whether you've ever seen Dr. Suzuki. He died last spring, I think it was, and he was about 97 at that time. He was like a little ceramic figure with great eyebrows and a darling little man, and he told the story, and he said, "Now, that very funny thing, baby just born, take 7 steps and say a thing like that." He said, "You'd think this, he should wait until he had his second birth, his spiritual birth, under the tree." But he said, "You know, we in the Orient, we all mixed up." He said, "We don't make distinction between spirit and matter. Material birth, spiritual birth." Then he went on in a long lecture, quoting sutras and sacred texts, making believe to lose his notes so that we could help him. You know how in Chinese pictures there are blank spaces that you fill in, sort of, you go into the picture, or so there are in lectures. To lecture too well is a little bit alienating, to fumble around and mispronounce things and lose the notes so that we could all I mean, they did, they blew around, and this was a very invoking lecture. We were all in it. And he finally brought it to this. He said, "You know, they tell me when a baby is born, baby cries. What does baby say when baby cries?" "Baby says, 'Worlds above, worlds beneath, there's no one in the world like me.'" Now he said, "All babies, Buddha babies." So what's the difference between Queen Maya's baby and your baby? That one knew it was a Buddha baby, and he behaved out of that knowledge. Yours is still caught in the toils of sense and mistake and the wrong instruction we're all giving them and all that kind of thing, and they have to break through. But this one, he had lived enough lifetimes to come down for his last look at things and to render in his life the image of a life lived yoked to pure consciousness. So what you're yoking yourself to is Buddhahood, not the Buddha. Consequently, for the Buddhist, it doesn't matter whether the Buddha actually lived or not. It's not like Christ. For the Christian, it makes a difference whether Christ did live, not for the Buddhist. The Buddhist, whether he is a mythological image or a fact, is a rendition of the mystery of Buddhahood in life. And he doesn't have to have been there at all for you to find the Buddhahood in yourself. He can serve just as a mythological figure, as a shadow on the wall, as an inspiration to you to find it in yourself. And then you're it.
Well, why do they have so many images?
They have so many images because the image helps people who need images. That's what the image is for. Why do you have pictures in your home? They direct your mind in a certain direction. Well, Buddha images direct the mind in the direction of Buddhahood, and the image is rendered in such a way that for a person in the Oriental tradition, its very form, its posture, its the harmony and the radiance and all, as it were, suggests Buddhahood. But you can't do more than suggest Buddhahood. There's a saying, when one points to the moon, the finger is not the moon. Don't mistake the finger for the moon. Don't mistake the Buddha for Buddhahood. He's pointing toward it. But you got to have somebody to point you. I had to have somebody point me to get here. But I didn't stop where the chap was who told me, you see.